Oglesby. All opinions expressed by the host or guests are their own and are not endorsed by either radio station KRLV management or any of their advertisers.
This is JT for Grimaldi's Pizzeria, that famous New York-style coal-fired brick oven pizza that you crave. Four locations in the Valley, Boca Park in Summerlin, on the Strip at the Palazzo, Southwest Las Vegas on South Rainbow, and in Green Valley on Southeastern Avenue.
Does anyone out there love paying taxes? Anyone? Me neither. Hi, I'm Dave Mizrahi, owner of Best Mattress, where right now we're having an instant tax savings event. And while we can't technically pay your sales tax for you, we can give you a discount equal to what your sales tax would be. Pretty cool, huh? Taxes schmaxes. Who's with me? Best service, best selection, best price. Best Mattress, home of the 120-day guarantee. Sleep easy, friends. See some details.
It's time for Heat Wave Sports. Sit back and relax as you take a tour around the world of sports each and every Saturday and Sunday night. And now, your hosts for Heat Wave Sports, Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
Guy like Mark Pope, who is Kentucky bred, right? He played, went to school there, major part of the basketball team. He's still upcoming coach, so it kind of fits in. They can get him cheaper, and he's willing to take that leap of faith, right, Tommy, because he's already established in that community. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it makes some sense. I think that there's also something to it, Tim, that Kentucky's just not that team anymore. I mean, here come the Kentucky hate, right? I'm going to get all the tweets out here, but in this generation that we're, you know, kind of still entering, right? When we talk about nil deals, when we talk about transfer portals, when we talk about the money that's going around, it's no longer, hey, I'm Kentucky. I walk into your living room and I can win. There's a reason why Nick Saban left the sport and Coach K left the sport. And we watched the exit of all these just absolutely fantastic coaches from football and basketball, because the nil deals and the money that can be had and the players getting paid and the transfer portal really screwed just a lot of things up. And Kentucky can't just say and live on the fact, hey, we're Kentucky. Yeah, okay. And how much are you going to pay me? Right? I mean, that's what's coming next. Okay, good. Good. Good for you. You're Kentucky. So when you hear, you know, Drew say, yeah, I actually prefer to stay at Baylor. Yeah, maybe there is some booster things there. I also feel like he's saying, you know what? Hey, I don't need Kentucky to make my career. I have Baylor. And Baylor can be just as formidable. You see teams that are on that mid-level that can be just as formidable. UConn. You know, Hurley decided to stay at UConn for less than half the price. I mean, he could have doubled his salary, Tim. Doubled it. I don't need to. I don't need that. I think because there's so much money to be had right now. So you could talk about the boosters being negative. I look at it as maybe they're not going to dole out as much money as they think for the players that they need to. Maybe the nil deals in Kentucky are not going to be what they once were. I just don't think Kentucky is Kentucky anymore. And I don't think that Pope's the answer. Good X's and O's guy, sure. But the Kentucky job is a lot more than that, Tim. Right? The Kentucky job is bring us back to prominence. If Kentucky doesn't make the out of the first weekend next year, aren't they going to all of a sudden start calling for this guy's head after 1 year? I mean, it's you have to go into immediate success. So what kind of success do we have Pope having? Ask yourself a question, Kentucky. Do you think that Pope is winning a championship in the next 5 years? Because I don't. So in that case, I don't think he's the guy.
Is today, as of today, Tom, is Kentucky and Baylor neck and neck as far as where you consider them in college basketball hierarchy? Are they about even? Is Kentucky still slightly ahead of Baylor, or is Baylor ahead of Kentucky? I mean, look at let's take the last 10 years. If we looked at the records, is there going to be that big of a difference?
Baylor's ahead. I mean, strictly from a standpoint of Let's go into the next season. Do I think that Baylor or Kentucky have a chance to reach the Sweet 16? I put my money on Baylor. Right? I mean, 5 years down the road, maybe I'm proven wrong by Pope. But I'm looking at Baylor, and like you said, give me the last five, even 10 seasons. Neck and neck, they're right there. Baylor's had massive successes. Baylor has a coach that I know can win. Kentucky's coming in with an unknown. Unknown team, unknown roster, unknown personality, unknown coach. Maybe it works out for them. Maybe it all goes swimmingly. It's very possible. But right now, if you ask me on a neutral court, I'm taking Baylor.
So if you're living in the past of Kentucky glory and looking at dollar signs, sure. But again, the same question is posed, right, Tom? What about Danny Hurley? They're going to throw the bank at him. Is it really about that for Danny Hurley or at this point? Because UConn is head and shoulders above Kentucky on the college basketball hierarchy as we speak.
I think Hurley is a type of guy, and I mentioned this on the show, you have two types of coaches, Tim, right? Coaches that want to build the program, coaches that want to build a ladder, right? A coach that wants to build the ladder says, okay, I'm going to start in high school, move up to an assistant coach, go to college, always have my eye on the NBA, go to the NBA, become an assistant, go to the NBA, have success. You know, that's what they want to do. Or, you know, get to the college ranks and I build and build and build until I get to a premier kind of spot. Then maybe I'm looking at, you know, the NBA at that point. They're always building. And then you have coaches that say, you know, I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to build what we have here. Never look to the NFL. Don't give me Nick Saban. He bolted, right? Don't give me Lou Holtz. He bolted. Don't give me Steve Spurrier. He bolted. No. A guy like a Bobby Bowden in football. A guy like a Coach K in basketball. A guy that I'm going to be here. I'm going to build something for 20 years. They're going to put a statue outside. I think that's what Hurley's looking at. He's you know, learned it from his dad. He's an old school kind of guy. Basketball runs through his blood. He's got a chance to do something historic. Yeah, you could go to Kentucky and win, and you can get a little bit more money. In this case, a lot more money. But can you have a three-peat in Kentucky? Can you make UConn win, what, three of the next five? Four of the next six? You know, five of the next 10? I mean, can you put a dynasty together? And that's what Hurley's doing in UConn. He didn't leave. I know a lot of people don't like him. He didn't leave not because he wasn't getting the money. He didn't leave not because Kentucky wasn't a good job. He didn't leave because he believes that UConn can be something seriously historic.
The more I look at the Calipari hire, as time has moved on, we're, you know, tomorrow will be a week, essentially. I think I kind of like it, Tom. And it's not that I'm a Calipari guy, per se. I didn't really have a problem with him either. I didn't like him or I didn't dislike him. I thought when he was at Memphis, he did a good job with that program. And then Kentucky's like just this, when he took that job at Kentucky, what, less than 10 years ago, different world, won a title, right? He did what he was supposed to do. And what's the old adage that sometimes the voice just, it disappears in the locker room, and maybe that's what happened at this point. And we kind of discussed it too with, when you go to Memphis, and I know he had some top guys, he had a few NBA guys there, right? But he also had to build a team. Kentucky, it was more of, we're reloading every year, right, Tom? We're reloading. He was lucky. If he got a blue-chip freshman, he was lucky to have him pass that year. So he was always bringing in, replacing the same type of players with the same type of players. And maybe that chemistry just wasn't effective, didn't have long enough to gel, whatever the case may be. He was always switching around. The names, you know the names that have come out. Look at all the guys in the NBA that played at Kentucky for a season or two. But in Arkansas, my feeling is that maybe for him, he can go back to kind of the Memphis game plan, right, Tom? And he'll have his one or two superstars, but then he'll have actually a team too. And I think for him, it's a fresh breath of air and a situation where he can be more of a coach that he wants to be rather than a guy who just collects talent and hopes that it translates out on the basketball floor. So I kind of like it, and I wouldn't be surprised as soon as next year, Tom, that Arkansas has a better record than Kentucky.
Tim, does he know how? Does he know how not to be the one and done Calipari? I mean, he became a punchline, right? I mean, it was fun to make fun of him, the one and done Calipari, right? You never expected guys to last more than one, and that was just it. That's who they were. Can he go back to it? Does he know how? It's an honest question. I don't have the answer to. I think he's going to win no matter where he goes. The level of winning is up in the air, but I think he's going to win no matter where he goes. But can he build this? Can he keep guys for more than a year? Or does he go in and try to employ the same kind of tactics that he had in Kentucky? You seem to think he's going back to his Memphis roots. I think Arkansas signs up for that. But it's hard to get away with basically put all this money on your table, right? It's hard to get away from the thing that just paid you, the name that you just got, which is one and done superstar, grab the NBA guys and let them leave.
Is Kentucky winning a national title in the next 5 years?
No.
Right? Is Arkansas winning a title in the next 5 years?
It's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
Yeah. That's my thoughts, too. That when you look at the coaches that are left, the next group that, as we get older, right, then it's a very eclectic group. But that guy, like you said, he's going to win because that's all he's ever done. So it's just a matter of – and you know what all it'll take, Tom? They get in the tournament next year, and they get to the Sweet 16. He's back, right? He's back.
That's it. That he only needs a small run, Tim.
Yeah. So I saw that, sticking with college hoops, the big man from UConn, Klingon, is going NBA. Duke. Filipowski's going to NBA, Tom. Speaking of Kentucky, is Reed Sheppard. Is he sticking around for Mark Pope, or is he going to the NBA? So a lot of these guys, a lot of big names declaring already. So not that I'm an NBA guy, you know that, Tom, but I do know the kids going in. This could be a very, very interesting group coming into the NBA.
Yeah, definitely a group coming into the NBA. But, Tim, it also is a big name guys and big group leaving college basketball. Mm-hmm. You start to look at a guy like, you know, like you said, Klingon and Eddie. And can we make an argument that, I don't know, you know, Bacock, can we make an argument that 8 or 9 of the best players in college basketball will be gone next year? I think we can. And that is a tough pill to swallow. That's a tough pill to swallow. I know, again, if you're a college basketball fan, doesn't matter. You just reload. I get it. Okay. But it is still a tough pill to swallow.
Sheed out of Houston, right, Tom? Back to Duke. McCain's
gone. I think
gone.
Sheed's staying.
Is he?
I think he announced that he's staying, and that's one of the reasons why Houston. Let me think. No, he declared. Nope, he declared 2 days ago. Yeah.
When you say that though, because there were a lot of talks that. A guy that you and I watched together here in town that, you know, V point guard Deedon Thomas Jr., that possibly he was talking about going to Houston, you know, V point guard. He was talking about transferring, putting himself in the portal, and that Houston would have been the destination. And had Sheed at the time was staying, maybe that's why that hadn't happened. And now he's declaring. I mean, who knows? Then again, somebody in the back room could have cut a check, right, Tom? An NIL deal, and all of a sudden, you're not going anywhere. So, who knows?
Yeah, well, you got to look at it with Sheed as kind of switched it up. He was supposed to be staying. And everything I read was he's a late second-round pick in the NBA. Maybe he got it, some agent in his ear going, no, we'll get you top of the second or late first. And that could be the difference. We also don't know. You know, his financial situation. He might say, you know what? I don't care. I just want to be in the NBA. It doesn't matter. I need that paycheck.
And, of course, he can pull his name back out. So it's not like as long as he doesn't sign with an agent, he's good to change his mind. So I don't – yeah, NBA-style basketball, I don't see him – it's not worth it to be a second-round pick anymore, Tom.
No, it's not. And that's the problem. That's why I think there was so much speculation. And I didn't see him sign, because originally I heard, oh no, he's staying. You know, he's absolutely staying. And I said, oh, okay, listen, you know, if he's staying, all of a sudden Houston bolts up that ranking, right? All of a sudden Houston's that team that you go, oh, here we go. He declares he's not going to make a lot of waves. And I think it's a mistake for him. He could have came back, probably brought this team to a Final Four. Mm-hmm.
You got time to talk a little hockey, Tom, before we take a break?
Yeah, let's get into some of it. I know okay. In my neck of the woods, things are getting interesting, where we could have an Islanders-Rangers first-round matchup. The Knights barely squeaking in, kind of falling in the back door, and I saw people going crazy. Oh, here we go. We're getting people back. And there was speculation just a couple of days ago that this team wasn't going to make the playoffs.
We don't generally cover hockey throughout the year as much as everything else, but we always do in the playoff time. And when you look at the West, all the team slots, the eight teams are decided on. It's just a matter of the next three games where the seeding falls, because there's a lot of room to be made there. But so Vegas, technically, Tom, right now they would be the eighth seed, but they could potentially move up into third in that Pacific Division, which would give them a six. So, you know, instead of playing Dallas or Edmonton, you end up with a better. I don't know what's better for them. It's stylistically, because Vancouver would be a two seed right now, and then Winnipeg, I think, would be a three seed. So things can change here in the next couple of days. Like tomorrow, they play Colorado. That's a big game for Vegas. They need to win that game, because they're 3 points behind the Kings with a game in hand. So literally come Wednesday, it could be a six seed, Tom, and all of a sudden it changes who your opponent could be. And stylistically, that does matter in the playoffs. You know that.
Yeah, very much so. Look, I'm going to say something that is a little controversial, but I don't think that this matters this year. I just look. I look at this Knights team, and again, guys, I hope that they prove me wrong. I look at this Knights team, and I said, there's been too much swimming upstream for this team. They have had a gritty, gutty, all the adjectives that you want to throw in, right? All the conversation. Gritty, gutty, you know, they were injured and came back, and it's the hockey playoffs. Anything can happen. I get it all, okay? But from the eye test, I don't see it. And it's not particular that I don't see it through Vegas, and I'm looking at Vegas, I'm being a hater here, Tim. It's more of a byproduct of, and I was talking to Rob about this week, it's more of a byproduct of the West is just stacked. It's just stacked. Look, you know, if you look at the Knights and you go, okay, let's be rational here. Are they better than the Stars? No. Jets? No. Avs? No. Canucks? No. Oilers? No. Okay. Maybe the Kings? Maybe they're better than the Preds? Maybe they're better than the Blues. Maybe they're better than the Wild. Maybe they're better than the Flames and the Crack. I mean, they're in that group. They're not in that top five. You put them on the ice, maybe they could take one of them out. All right, you know what? Anything can happen in a series against the Oilers or the Canucks. Anything can happen against a series of the Avs. Maybe the Jets. Maybe the Stars. Anything can happen, Tim, right? Anything can happen. That's kind of how you start to have that conversation. Anything can happen. You're right. Anything can happen against some of those teams. But you're going to have to do it like three times to make this a historic year. The West is just absolutely stacked. I would argue, and look, I'm an Eastern guy, okay? The Bruins, maybe my Rangers, maybe the Hurricanes. Outside of that, I think the top probably seven next teams, seven of the top 10 teams, I would say, are in the West. So, I mean, Vegas has a puncher's chance. But it's not that they can't get by one round. They're going to have to do this and get by three rounds, Tim. And three rounds against elite Western Conference teams. To me, they just don't pass the eye test.
Yeah, you're right. Any team has a puncher's chance. Any team can upset and win a series. Any team can get a hot goalie, right? Isn't that always it's what we always hear every year now. Oh, you get that hot goalie going in the NHL playoffs, and you never know what can happen. Really? I didn't know that was a you're absolutely right. I don't know why I didn't think about that. Great analysis. It's like it's laughable. It really is, because yeah, we all know that. It's the same thing, right? Oh, you don't want to get too hot in the NFL before the end of the season, because eventually you have to lose at some point. Do you really though? Yeah. I hate the way people think nowadays. It's just, why do you play the season then if all you need is a hot goalie to get in the playoffs? We understand that happens. And I'll tell you, speaking of goalies, this is my thing on the Knights. See, you set me off, Tom. We didn't want to get into this, but you set me off, man.
Run it.
I'm tired. I'm tired of Vegas Golden Knight fans talking about, well, we got Mark Stone coming back soon. That's wonderful. This is about the time he was supposed to be cleared to practice. I get it. I don't need you to update me every day. Mark Stone took a shower today, guys. One day closer. Just shut it, man. We all understand he's a huge, vital part of that offense and that team. He's the captain he should be. And yes, his presence on the ice does make a dramatic difference. But instead of telling me that he took a shower, went to the gym today, why don't you tell me about, you don't know how he's going to be if he's truly healthy. You know, that's the thing about Mark Stone. He's had injury issues every year since he's been in Las Vegas. And yes, it worked to their benefit last year, right, Tom? Injured, came back in the playoffs. They won a cup. Can you count on that every year, though? The guy's beaten up. Just his back is destroyed. Now his spleen, you know, there's so many things. That's the whole onus of this, is that the eye test for them is that they've had so many injuries, which happens to all teams. What makes Vegas Golden Knight fans seem to think that the world only exists with their team? And I ask you that because you live in the hotbed of professional sports, regardless of what it is. And people may not like to hear this, right, Tom? But it's the truth. Regardless of the sport, New York is always the talk of the town. Whether the teams are bad, whether the teams are good, whether the teams are absolutely awesome at that time. Everybody's always talking about the Yankees. Everybody's always talking about the Mets, the Knicks, the Rangers, Islanders. Why, you know, and do your fans act like the fans out here? That's the thing for me. It upsets me because I have to hear about Mark Stone's coming back. I have to hear about, oh, well, like I just said, Tom, we have 3 games left. We still end up being a 6th seed, man. Changes everything, right? We could get on that path to defending the title. Say something that we don't know. Say something that's going to be credible to this team. I'll tell you, here's my thing. I'll tell you something you don't know, Vegas Golden Knight fans. I'll tell you something you don't know. Your goaltending's terrible. How about that? The same guy that led you to that cup last year, Aiden Hill, that you want to jump on the bandwagon, well, you're breaking his back now because he hasn't had a great year. And what do they do, Tom? What's the one thing they do when something's not going right, man?
Change them.
Yeah. Yeah. Who else can we have? Aiden Hill's terrible. Like, literally just kissing his ass all season long, but now all of a sudden he's not good enough for you. Is it like that in New York? Just if it is, then I'm wrong and I apologize.
Absolutely not. Listen, New York fans are the hardest fans out here. You know, New York, Philly, Boston, you don't know sports unless you're dealing with these three fan bases and press and everything else. But there's a realistic, and I've always said this, there's a realism, a realistic notion to what teams are. You could jump on, you could jump off, you could be a great fan, a bad fan, but you still have a realism to things. And you kind of understand what players are, what teams are, and what the expectation of these players and teams are. The Rangers are in first place. You don't hear, we're winning the cup. You hear, hey, got a shot this year. We like how the goalie's playing, right? You gotta love Fox. You love Panarin. All right, hey, they got some stuff, but man, oof. And I gotta get a little bit more scoring up. It's always, hey, we could make a run, but we got some questions. Okay, we got some things. And if you turn on New York radio, New York Sports Talk Radio, you're going to hear most people calling up about the negatives that need to be fixed. All right, look, you know, good line, good first line. The second line's a little worried right now. Okay, you know, hey, Panarin, a little bit of a slump. And these are the calls that you're going to get. Look, I like the team. I like the outlook. They got a shot, but Same thing with the Islanders. Now, Islander fans are a little bit different because they're coming from behind. They're in a great winning streak up until today. But the Islanders were going, hey, get us in the playoffs with our defense. You know, maybe we win a round or two. No one's mentioning Stanley Cup for either one of these teams that both have a legit chance. I open up my Twitter feed and I see the word Stanley Cup next to the Vegas Golden Knights repeat. How all of a sudden, uh-oh, here we go. Someone's coming back. And everyone, I saw a post the other day, not to throw anybody under the bus. I don't even want to mention the name because I like him a lot. And he's not wrong, but just the phrasing. All the other fan bases better watch out. And you're going, yeah, no other fan bases care. You know, the Knights are not scary enough with one guy. And that's part of the charm of the Knights and part of the reason they're so good is that they're not a one guy kind of. Or this isn't Matthews coming back. This isn't McDavid coming back, right? And they don't need him to come back. I think Vegas and the success that was just instilled right away into this team just gives people the rosy-colored glasses.
And I want to say, you know, I can go on a little tangents, my little outbursts. And I know a lot of guys that I respect their hockey opinion. The late Frank Harness was one of them, right? He knew hockey, and you could talk to him, and he would agree with you or disagree with you. But if you made a point that was anti-Vegas Golden Knights, and he agreed with it, he'd say, you're absolutely right. The problem with the Vegas Knight fan base is that, yes, you have your hardcore hockey fans. They understand. They can look at both sides of the you know, they look at both sides of it, and that picture for them becomes realistic. The most part of the fan base, though, is the partiers or the social medias, or it's cool to go to a Knights game. That's what's been marketed to, and that's, you know, or in this case nowadays, who can afford to go to the game, right? That's what the majority of the fan base is, and those are the ones that want to talk, and those are the ones that want to post because they can run their mouths on social media without any repercussion, right? They're not saying those things to a true hockey fan's face, whereas in New York, I know this, Tom, right? You guys could damn near get in an all-out brawl over something being said, but generally there's something right about both sides of the statement. In Vegas, it's all about, oh, Aiden Hill sucks now. Was he really going to be the guy? And I know we had this conversation last year after they won the title. Is that really the guy? Do you see him as a top 10 goalie in the NHL? And I don't. I still don't. And that's nothing against him. I don't have a problem with him at all. Last year, Tom, they basically just crucified Laurent Brossoit, the backup. He's terrible. He sucks. Get rid of him. He's the backup in Winnipeg right now, Tommy, behind Hellebuyck. Statistically, he has less games played. But statistically, if you put him on the same pace, he's lights ahead of Aiden Hill right now. So
look, I was one of those guys, though, Tim, that I thought it was a good signing. Yeah. You know, I thought Hill was a good signing because what they needed him to be. But I also said to you, and I told everybody when we were on the air, yeah, he might be a good signing. That doesn't particularly mean that I think he's a top 10 guy. And I still don't think he's a top 10 guy in the league. But I think with this kind of team setup, they can still win with him, or I thought that they could. Vegas has gone out there this year and proven that they can win with different styles. I think that they've shown a lot this year. I'm actually pretty impressed with what I've watched this year. In the same breath that I will say that, Tim, I there's a difference between being impressed and being able to win games and thinking a team can be okay and win games and going out there and talking about a Stanley Cup. And that is the difference. You want to sit at your guys and you want to have a conversation. You want to have a conversation with me and say, Tom, they're going to win a series. They're going to upset some people. They're going to put a team or two on notice. Hey, they may win two series. This is going to be a hard-fought game. This is going to be a hard-fought series. This is going to be a tough playoffs. I am all aboard all of that. But I think you're asking a little too much, and you're setting yourself up for failure if you think that this team has the type of season behind them, the type of goalie in goal, to go to your point, the type of health that is needed to make a Stanley Cup run again this year. It's a lot to ask for when everything falls into place, and things just didn't fall into place. And the other thing I will add, Tim, you know, specifically with Sports Talk Radio, but it's also with print and everything else, people get the notion that if you question the team or you see the negative, you're a bad fan. Mm-hmm. I think it's the other way around. Not to get into political kind of situation, but if you don't question your government, you know, people ask all the time when a president comes up or you know, a governor race or something, oh, do you like this guy? You know, he did this, this, and this. Look, I don't agree with anybody on everything. And I think you got to be a crazy person if you do. I actually think the person that is better is the person that's questioning things. I like the Golden Knights fans that interact with me. They say, all right, we gotta fix this, this, and this. It doesn't mean you're a worse fan because you're not just a fanboy. It means that you're looking at the game critically and saying, hey, how can we polish up so we can go on that run? So, Tim, you know, you're going to get hate mail for everything you just said about Vegas Golden Knights. But it's because you're looking at it with a critical eye and you see more in this team and what they can do to kind of clean it up. You were never a fan of Hill. You made that loud and clear. I was a fan. And I'm sitting here and going, I was a fan that didn't think he was going to be a top 10 guy, which he's not. And I thought that, hey, he could win some games. I don't know if he could go out there, maybe not, and win a championship. Not, I still don't know that, but I know when everything falls into place and everything's perfect, maybe he can. He did it. Can he do it when things aren't perfect? Not many goalies can, Tim.
I'm not a hockey scout. I only go by what I see and what I feel and what I've witnessed in the past and what I do know. He's a good goaltender, but there's a lot of good goaltenders in the NHL. Is he an elite goaltender? No. He could win the cup this year, and I still think he's not elite yet. I almost felt that they were like almost forced, Tom, to sign him after they won the cup. Right? He technically could have went somewhere else. It was almost like they got backed into signing him. Because how do you not re-sign the Stanley Cup goaltending the winner of the cup? How do you not? Right? I felt like maybe that was the plan, that they had to do it. I don't know. I still think that way.
I think they had to as well. You know, Tim, let's real quick, let's stay on this if we can, okay? I know that, you know, sports betting isn't everything, and I just want your opinion here, okay? And I want to get your opinion on how they match up with teams in the Western Conference, okay? So let's have a conversation about the Western Conference and the standings right now. Tell me, flat out, are they better or worse, okay? We don't have to set a line or anything. Is this team head-to-head series, are they better than the Stars?
No.
Better than the Jets?
I would say they're it's close. It's close for me. I know you look at the records say otherwise, but stylistically, I think they fit better playing the Jets than they would Dallas. So.
Better than the Avs.
I kind of put them in the same boat with Winnipeg. I think Winnipeg has better goaltending, though, Tom. So if that says anything, then I would say Vegas may be slightly, in a seven-game series, maybe slightly. You're talking about if they're healthy, though, too, right? Or are you talking about right now?
Yeah, just okay. Look, you know, going through them in the playoffs, who's a better team?
Yeah, I think if Vegas is healthy, I think that they're slightly better than Colorado. But, again, you know, it's tough. It's a toss-up.
Better than Vancouver?
Vancouver's good. No, I don't think they're better.
Better than the Oilers?
No, absolutely not. The Oilers, thing about the Oilers was they can score. We knew that. Well, guess what, Tom? They found a little defense this year, too. So that makes them a definite no. They're not better than Edmonton.
Better than the Kings?
Yeah, I think so. I think they are.
Okay. So you have a definitive four teams that are better than them. One team in the Avs that maybe, right? So it could be five.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to go into the Predators, Blues, anybody. So five teams are better than them. you're looking at them at the best, the sixth best team in the West. I think that's fair. And that'll upset a lot of people that are listening. But I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah. I think that's perfectly fair.
And I'm biased, so what do you say?
I was afraid they were going to miss the playoffs a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
You know, I think on neutral ice, the Kings might be better. You know, so I'll do the same thing. I think their height, to me, their height is that they win a series. I don't think they get past that second round. I don't think that they can get past that second round, which, again, gives them a very limited ceiling.
And we'll do the NHL playoff preview, but if you look at the teams in the West, they all, like Dallas, scoring machine, right, Tom? Even Colorado, scoring machine. Edmonton, scoring machine. They all have good goaltending, though, too. Winnipeg yes. hasn't even given up 200 goals this year. So I don't know if they're going to be able to go out there and win these expect to win games, scoring 5-6 goals in the play. I think it's going to be a little bit tighter this year.
This is a very, very, very tough road. Not saying it can't happen. We've seen stranger things, you know, mm-hmm. but it's a tough road when you're sitting back and you really are talking about, you know, what they can be, what they are right now. They could be fun. They could be entertaining. They could win a series. But I think we got to pump the brakes on the long-term aspects this year on this Vegas Golden Knights team. And I hope I eat my words. I hope other shows are playing my clips when Vegas is winning a Stanley Cup this year. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I want to talk one more hockey note before we take the break. So my guy, Tom. My guy. I want to say like maybe, see, how long have we been on the air now? 14. So right after UA Sports debuted, Alexander Ovechkin was doing a autograph session at Field of Dreams inside Caesar's Palace. So I went down there. I got my jersey signed. It's in a frame in my house, right? Big-time Capitals fan. You know that, Tom. I don't know what his English is like. He was able to say hi, and if he asked me if I liked the Capitals, right? So he's able to say that, but other than that, it wasn't like this grand discussion, and there wasn't a line of people. The autograph was actually kind of expensive, so I think that kind of eliminated the riffraff from hanging out. So he had a couple KGB guys with him, it seemed like, you know, surrounding him. But it was interesting, right? Because I've always been a fan of his. But I think he's an unbelievable player still to this day. But back then, just crazy how wicked his shot is. And then, of course, when they won the cup, oh, yeah, that was here in Vegas, right, Tom? They won on the Knights ice. I was there, and I was able to go on the ice. That was pretty cool. But anyways, enough. So he just got his 18th 30-goal season in his career. So that's an NHL record now. He is going to be 39 come beginning of next year, and there's still 3 games left. He's 42 goals behind Wayne Gretzky right now, Tom, for all-time goal scorer in the NHL history. Where is he going to rank when he decides to retire in the next couple years? Where is he going to rank all-time on your list as greatest NHL players ever?
Ooh, 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 ooh. Ooh, that is a loaded question.
And I'm biased on this one too, so.
Yeah, okay, let's, I like it. Okay, well, Gretzky's number one, I think, with a bullet, right? I don't think, not many people are going to argue that, okay? So Gretzky's number one, not even a discussion needed there.
Right.
Bob Uhr is generally considered number two, obviously before my time. And while I am a baseball and football historian, I am not a hockey historian, so I will lean to that, say 1-2. I watched Lemieux, right? I got to put him there. Gordie Howe, I'm going to put a 3, actually. Again, another guy that before my time. So 1-2-3. Then we get into, I think Lemieux is better than Ovechkin. Was Jágr? I don't know. Was Crosby? That's close. Was Messi? I'm partial to Messier. I'll put Messier. You have guys like Bobby Hull. What about are we doing goalies with a Patrick Waugh, a Mike Bossy, mm-hmm. a Hasek? Right? I'm gonna firmly put him in outside the top five, inside the top ten. I think he's in the class. I probably nudge Jágr above him. If I'm taking goalies out, which I almost have to, I think he's right after that. He might be as high as six. Is he better than Messier? I'm going to put Messier right there. Is he better than Crosby? I think Ovechkin and Crosby are a pretty good 1-2. Maybe have a Bobby Hull in there as well. I know Chris is probably going to call about Yzerman. Ray Bourque has got to be put up there. A Paul Coffey. And now, again, this is me taking out goalies. I think it's fair to put him outside the top five, inside the top 10. I think he is better than Crosby. Not sure about some of the other guys. I'll put him at 6-7 there, Tim. He's right there for me.
From an objective standpoint, and you know what? 100% agree that if we're looking at it that way, that's fair. I agree. That's fair. It's more than fair. I've seen people's lists. Sometimes you scratch your head. I'm like, really? How do you figure that? Because it's all objective to what you're looking at. So for me, if and when he breaks the record, let's just say it that way, next year, he will have played kind of just about the same amount of games that Gretzky did to do it. So he's about 60-some games behind Gretzky overall for his career, and he's 40 goals behind. So he might not get it next year, right? And as we all know, Father Time waits for nobody. So he got 30 basically at the end of this year. So it's probably going to take him, unless he just goes on an unbelievable scoring run next year, it'll take him 2 years. So Gretzky, no doubt, there's nobody even close to him. People want to put Jágr in discussion. The thing for me with Jaromir Jágr is he played like 300 more games than these guys, Tom. So stat compiler, right? We always talk about where your stat compiler's at. I feel that Jágr, I feel that Messier, I feel that Gordie Howe, people like to talk about Ron Francis. They're all stat compilers to me because they've played essentially 4 to 5 more seasons than the Gretzky's and the Ovechkin's. Let's put it that way. Even you look at Joe Sakic, he did it. He's got 1,600 points for his career, and he's played 100 less games than Ovechkin. So I'd have Sakic above some of these guys. And you said Yzerman. I think Yzerman, wonderful. He also played less games than the guys that rank all time with points. So for me, it's Gretzky. And I don't even know if I can put those guys in the list that I don't know, Tom. We're going off what stats, right? That's the only thing we can go by because it's unfair to compare, so. I got him like top four, man. And
okay, look, it's not that far off. If you're removing Gordie Howe and Bobby Orr because you didn't see them, then mm-hmm. I think top four is an arguable point. I just lean to the historians. I'm putting Gretzky one. Those guys are 2-3. So if you just give me the 2-3, you know, and then right, is he better than a Jágr? That's close. I think that's kind of the line of demarcation, right? A lot of people are going to say that he's better than Crosby. Yeah, and a lot of people are going to take Crosby over there. To me, there's not much of a discussion there. I'm looking at the guys like the Messiers, the guys that were winners in that kind of respect. They get a bump up from me, but again, I know it's personal. I don't think you're off base saying he's top five, even if you want to go as high as four. But I don't think he could crack that top three of all time. You want to start having the conversation about the Penguins, right? And that's really what you're doing. right? It's the three Penguins, Lemieux, Jágr, and Crosby. Yeah. I don't think he was as good as Lemieux. I think you can argue Jágr, and I do think he's better than Crosby.
Yeah. Even though Crosby, 200 almost 200 less games, but he would have not – I don't think he would have scored 300 goals. So, yeah, it's
– different player, though, right? I mean, Ovechkin would take a hit. Ovechkin played defense. Ovechkin was a
– correct.
You know, that kind of down-in-the-dirt player. Crosby was strictly and nothing but offense.
He was the protected pretty boy, Tom. That's what it was. It was like
absolutely.
What movie was that in the 80s? Rob Lowe?
Yes. I know what you're talking about.
Youngblood.
My sister had a picture of that. Youngblood.
Yeah, Youngblood.
My sister had a picture on her wall.
And it's a discussion that we're going to have when he retires. But
do you think he's better than Lemieux?
No.
Okay. No. So who is your top – who's your three in front of him? Gretzky, Lemieux, and Orr?
I never saw Orr play either. So, and I know this is a head scratcher because how do you determine this? But for me, I mentioned him. I love Joe Sakic a lot, man. And that I think he's statistically underrated. And I think from a broad picture, as a player, he brought, you know, you're talking about when Ovechkin retires, Sakic will have 200 less games. And he's still going to have almost 400 more assists. And I know we can go stat for stat and say this and that, you know, but just when I watch guys control, when I look at Ovechkin, he dominates attention, right? And he can beat you within a blink of an eye. And Sakic, for me, wasn't explosive like that, but it's all these little things that he did, kind of like Messier a lot, like Messier. Just all these little things, they add up. And over time, I think, did you know, Tom, that he's in the top 10 overall for points in a career? Did you know he was a top 10 guy?
No. And I like Sakic. I didn't know. I didn't think of him ever in that light.
So if we're taking out all the guys that I didn't watch, you have Gretzky, you have Jágr, who I can't put in there because he played almost 1,800 games, man. Messier, same thing, right? Ron Francis. Iserman, you could put Iserman in the mix, but so maybe I go out on the edge there. I think at the end of the day, once it's over, I'll probably slide him up to three. But right now, those are just the guys ahead of me. And I know people probably think I'm crazy for saying that, but I think Joe Sakic is massively underrated when you talk about just greatest players of all time. And to be in a top five list, for me to put him at number three might be absurd, but that's just the way I see it right now.
Tim, just for fun, where's McDavid right now? Right now, where will he be? Where is he right now? I got him inside my top 20.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. I think he's done enough from what I've seen. Yeah, I've always said this with every sport, with every Hall of Fame. You know me, I have a very tough hall. I would rather see you dominate for 5, 6, 7 years than to compile for 25. Look, compiling for 20 plus years is its own credit. I just like guys that dominate. And I've never seen a player since Wayne Gretzky, including Mario Lemieux, dominate the way that McDavid dominates this league.
Yeah, he's awesome to watch, man. I don't know if I can put him top 20 yet.
In a league with Austin Matthews and on a team with Draisaitl, there's no question, you know, people, it's laughable that he's not the best player.
More hockey to come here in the next couple weeks here on Heat Wave Sports. Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas, hour two on the way. Major League Baseball up for discussion with Tim, Tom, and Mateo. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM.
Now back to Heat Wave Sports.
Second hour of Heatwave Sports on a Saturday night. Tim Unglesby, Tom Barton. Back at it tomorrow night, Super Sunday night. Next Saturday, we are off. And then next Sunday, Tom, the NFL mock draft. So that'll be fun, as always.
And Tim, I might be off any time now. So we are on watch, just letting you know. We are now under 5 weeks to go. So, you know, my daughter came 3 weeks early. So there might be a one of those, hey, you know, it happened, so I'm not on the air tonight.
We're on baby watch.
We are on baby watch.
Start the counter.
Yeah, we're at 5 weeks. So at this point, it's kind of, you don't want him, you know, him to come quickly, but we know that anything can happen now.
As always, you can follow us over on the social media at Tom Barton Sports, at HW Sports. Tommy consistently is providing nuggets of information if you keep up with his timeline. I just recently started posting games again that I like, Tom, and I don't know if you saw or not, but the Diamondbacks did win tonight, so got me back in the W column. I was starting to get worried there, man. I was doing so good, and then I go here on the X and I start posting, and now I'm losing. I don't like this, but here's the thing, right, Tom? The handicap is right. It just doesn't always play that way out, you know? That's the worst.
It's funny because, you know, sometimes going back to simplistic is better. I love short favorites or short underdogs in a doubleheader. I told you, I said, man, I having a hard time this year. I was about 500, you know, and I'm going, I'm making a little bit of money, but I'm 500. I tried the Royals, you know, against the Mets after they were doing well, plus the 130. Nope, didn't win. What did I come back with today, Tim? Bread and butter. Yankees, both sides of the doubleheader. Boom, boom. You know, back on track. And that's all it takes. You know, one kind of, all right, let's settle this back down and get back in. I know you've been throwing me, you know, your game, so you're crushing it. But, of course, as soon as you go and start being monitored, that's what happens.
So we have plenty of time. Kind of look at the first month of the season, right, Tom? It's not even been a full month yet. These teams are, what, 14, 15 games in. But I wanted to start out with something that it seems like almost every other day we get hit with an injury update. Oh, so-and-so, DL, out for the year, whatever, ligament, Tommy John. So Spencer Strider is that guy now, right? Gone for the year. Huge blow to the Braves. But I believe, if you want to rewind tape, you said something was going to happen to one of these guys in that rotation, because it just seems to be the way it's happening. So just in the past week, Strider, Framber Valdez, Pivetta, Yuri Perez, Shane Bieber, all going to miss time because they have elbow situations, right? Some longer than others, surgeries, TJ. Add that to the club that already had Garrett Cole and Robbie Ray, Otani, Jacob DeGrom, right? Alcantara. We're going back last year now, guys. Kyle Bradish and Means from Baltimore. Giolito, Giolito signed with a new team and it automatic first game, boom, right? I mean, I could go on for an hour of all the names, Tom, that are on the list. Verlander, who's coming back. I saw him pitch at Double-A today. Kershaw, Woodruff. These top guys, Tom, that are done with this, or spent time on the injured list or have had the surgery. And the more that I see players come out and talk about it, and Verlander was one of these guys, and he said, there's an interview out on Twitter if you look for it, he recently did, where it was like a 10-minute interview, too. He had talked about that, what are all the reasons this could be happening? And he said, basically, and I'm going to paraphrase a lot of this, but he said that, you know, he thinks that these guys, they're throwing too hard, and it's all about speed and power. And the interviewer asked if he thought that the pitch clock had something to do with it, and he's like, maybe. A lot of this didn't happen this frequently until after that was implemented and rest. And I mean, he went into this whole thing and it made a lot of sense, but Major League Baseball, Tom, swears that none of these rules changes that they've added could potentially have anything to do with that. It's just it's an anomaly, man. What do you think?
I think it's 100% has something to do 100% with the way we're treating pitchers now. And I don't only mean the pitch clock. You know, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Tim. I took a full hour And I wasn't even supposed to. I took a full hour when it came down about Spencer Strider. Strider complaining about the pitch clock and how people were going to get hurt before he got hurt. Right? Before he got hurt, he was like, people are going to get hurt. I coached very young, but I've been coaching now for 7 seasons. And in 7 seasons, and I coached 2 seasons in each year. So 7 years, you know, 2 seasons, I've had more than a dozen teams. Right away, Tim, I'm talking 5, 6 years old, 7 years old, 8 years old. I'm into the 10-year-olds now. I'm playing 10, 11. You know, the saving of the arm just doesn't happen, right? I mean, it just doesn't happen. So what happens is that when you're young, you play at, like, you know, a league, whatever it might be, North Shore Little League, right? We'll call it. And then you play a travel team, and then you play probably another travel team. Now, you have diligent fathers that try to maintain and watch it, but kids want to play. Kids don't always tell the hey, you know what? I pitched on Tuesday 60 pitches. Maybe I shouldn't pitch the next day. Now, all the leagues set up where you can and can't pitch, how you can and can't pitch, and it's all abused. And it's abused at 8, 9, 10 years old. It starts to get abused and, you know, messed with as you get at 11, 12, 13, 14. You know, I'm a sports reporter. I have, you know, an article, and I actually just got a bump up. I'm a full sports reporter taking care of high school baseball. They try to watch it, Tim. These guys want to win, you know? And then you get into the minor leagues, and all of a sudden, oh, well, now we're going to start, you know, pumping you up. But these guys know. You could be a great pitcher in the minors, Tim, but you're not going to get the attention of the scouts. You're not going to get the attention of the major league club unless you throw 95. So the art of pitching has gone away. Now you have guys trying strictly to throw velocity. They don't care about anything else. They don't care about location. It doesn't matter. Look at Joe Boyle for the A's, right? All velocity. Can't hit the strike zone, but all velocity. Okay, he'll work it out in the majors. Well, you just need that 99-mile-per-hour fastball up there. We just need that. Mason Miller from the A's, 103, 103, 103 the other day, 3 straight pitches. This is what they want. They want those eye-popping numbers. And then you go, oh, by the way, now you're going to throw harder than you ever should. You're going to put full effort every single time. And now we're going to rush you in that full effort. So you're not going to have the proper mechanics. And we're also going to do things like, you know, bring in the walls and just cater to offense. So you better throw at 105, not even 103, because that's not good enough anymore. This is what you're telling pitchers, right? Now you're going, well, also, by the way, we talked to the umpires and we're going to, you know, expand the zone. Shorten the zone. We're not going to expand it. So hitters are going to be walking more. If you don't hit that strike zone, you better come over the middle, and then you're blasting it out. Well, you better get to that 105. This is the mentality. Everything as a combined is telling pitchers, hey, you know what? This is what you need to do. You need to blow your arm out or damn near try if you want to make it to the show. And Tim, when I did that show a couple of weeks ago, I likened it to how the NFL has changed the rules for the offense, right? Every single rule for the last 2 decades has been driven to get more offense, and more offense in the NFL. And they succeeded, right? But is this product better? I don't know. What I can tell you is that the Major League Baseball product is not better. It's not a better product without Spencer Strider and Gerrit Cole and Framber Valdez and all of the aces. These guys that are getting hurt are not 3, 4, 5 guys. They're not bullpen guys. These are the ace of the staffs. These are the faces of baseball, the absolute icons. That's a problem. And it's not one thing. It's not just the pitch timer. But you know what? That throws it in there. It's not taking away the sticky tack, the spider tack, right? But that is added to it. Let them have the spider tack. No more pitch clock. You know, raise the mound if you want. Do things to bring pitching back. If you don't, we're entering a generation, and I called this on the air years ago. We're entering a generation, Tim, where the opener is not going to be a rarity. It's going to be everybody. Everyone's going to have a specialty. You're going to see 3-inning guys. No one's going to go through the rotation twice, and that's how you go through the lineup twice. That's how you're going to build a rotation. You're going to face the first 9 guys one time. Someone else is going to come in. That's what it's going to be, and that's not a good baseball product.
Are they going to do anything? Is this what's going to be done to curtail injuries, arm injuries? Nothing, because they haven't done it before.
Nothing. They won't do a thing. They don't care. You know, they simply don't care. They are perfectly okay with the way things are right now. They are okay with the scoring's up, the viewership is up, people are liking what we're watching. They're fine with that. They simply don't care that their stars, their aces are down, because that just means more scoring. And fans love scoring.
Right. Let's peek around the league, Tom, divisions in both leagues. Get the Tom Barton analysis. Like I said, most teams are between 14 and 16 games, it seems like. So National League West, Dodgers right now, 10-6, Tom. 2 games up on the Padres. Arizona, 2.5. Giants, 3.5. Colorado, 5.5. So initial thoughts on the NL West right now with the Dodgers up over the Padres.
Well, the Dodgers won again tonight. They actually just ended. There was a delay in L.A. So they just ended. They won again here. And is anyone shocked at these, you know, standings? Dodgers out in front. Padres right about 500, where they've been for years. D-backs a little under 500. Giants, I'm a little shocked that the Giants aren't playing better. I know Blake Snell got off to a rough start. He starts tomorrow. The Rockies are going to be pathetic. Yeah. There's nothing that shocks me here. If anything, it's shocking that the Dodgers lost 6 games. I was told they wouldn't lose 6 games all year, Tim. So maybe that's the shocking part.
You took the over 156 for wins? Is that?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, I always thought, I honestly did. We did our preview, and I told you, Dodgers will win this division. But I didn't see that 110, 115 win because they didn't have the pitching.
Yeah. Speaking of, Bobby Miller, DL. So they still don't have the pitching, Tom. Arizona, for me, and I agree with your assessment on San Francisco. I thought people said they overreacted, right? Oh, they overreacted. They went out and got Snell. That was an overreaction. Oh, Matt Chapman, overreaction. Maybe, but maybe it'll work out for him late in the year, having those veterans there. So, yeah, I'm kind of surprised there, too. The offense kind of stinks right now in San Francisco. When you look at the teams above them have scored 20 more runs. Each of them have scored 20 more runs. Offense. In fact, Tom, you just said it. The Rockies have more runs scored than the Giants do right now. So, but the bats will come around, you assume. Arizona's the one. Like, they were surprised last year, right, Tommy, with what they were able to do, getting all the way to the World Series. And I was looking for a little regression because unless they get back there, Tom, it's a regression of the season, right? So if you're trying to compare season to season, but they got off to like I think a little rough start as well here, but they're sneaky dangerous for me, and that's the thing in this division. Padres, I think, are going to be the Padres, and the Dodgers. It's all going to depend on the pitching there. Arizona, I think, you know, come what September, Tom, we might be talking about the D-backs again.
Well, 100% free with Turbo Tax free edition.
Oh, sorry about that. I think. Go ahead. Sorry.
And by the way, you have a guy in Jordan Montgomery. They will come back at some point to bolster that rotation.
I think the problem with the D-backs right now is that their star is not playing like a star. Corbin Carroll's one home run.
Yeah.
Yeah. And don't tell me that. Well, yeah. Look at what Carroll did at the end of the year last year, late August, September, October. He wasn't the same guy. He'll still steal you 40 bases, but he's your star. You need some kind of power out of him. You go out there, you get Aguino Suarez. He's not kind of putting the ball, bat on the ball the way you thought. Christian Walker had a phenomenal year last year. The guy's into his 30s. You know, so when you have a team that has multiple big-time bats, multiple big-time stars, that's okay. You can have a slow start. You can have a 15-game slump to start the season. But when you're the D-backs and basically you have Corbin Carroll and everybody else, you can't have that. And I think that this team goes as Corbin Carroll goes.
NL Central, Tom, the Brewers 10-3. They won 4 in a row. They're going for a sweep tomorrow, Baltimore. Pittsburgh 10-5. Nice start to the season. I checked the schedule there. They have won 7 of their 10 games on the road. And then you have 500 teams in Cincinnati, Chicago, and St. Louis. So we'll start with the Brewers, Tommy. 10-3. chance to sweep Baltimore tomorrow on the road.
They're winning with hitting the ball, right? I mean, they are just slugging the ball. Freddie Peralta has become the ace. I still worry about this team. Wade Miley, to me, he's more of a four at this point in his career. Maybe you force him to a three. Ashby came up. He didn't look good. Milowinski, a kid in the minors, he's supposed to come up right now. You know, he's not there. Devin Williams is still banged up. Yet, with all the pitching issues that I said the Brewers just have, they're 10-3, man. Their offense is rolling. Yelich looks good. Churio looks like he could become a star. Adames looks a lot better than he did last year. Early on, this Brewers team is deep, and if they can get their pitching on track, which to me, they're one pitcher away, who, by the way, is playing in Baltimore now, pitching against them tomorrow, but they are one pitcher away from me going, okay, I'm buying in right now. I don't know if I'm buying into 10-3. In this division, though, you might have to.
How about Pittsburgh, 10-5? I know they haven't had the toughest schedule, Tom, but games are games. You got to win them.
They have not had a tough schedule, but again, I see a lot on the horizon. Think about the Pirates. You know they're not going to make a big move, right? Okay. They're not going to make that trade. But the Pirates are sitting here with two guys in the minor leagues that can immediately help out. If the Pirates are in this thing, they're bringing up Paul Skeens, and he's the ace of the staff. He's the ace immediately tomorrow, okay? If the Pirates are in this thing, all of a sudden, you do have an 8-9. I know Bednar struggled, but he's the 9. You have Chapman and Bednar. Whoa, hold on a second. If the Pirates are in this thing, they have some minor league bats that could come up. I mean, Pittsburgh can be for real. I took the over, the team total over before the year. I told you I like the Pirates and Washington to battle this year to maybe be that surprise team. I had the Pirates last year, and I cashed into the team total over. I'm not shocked. What I'm telling people is that if the Pirates can hang in there and Pittsburgh could be in this thing come mid-June and Paul Skeens joins this team, Pittsburgh becomes dangerous.
Tommy, what about the Cardinals? Last year, a lot of veteran additions to the pitching staff, and it just fell apart on a terrible year for St. Louis. And you're not used to seeing that from the Cardinal organization. Chalk it up to a bad year, right? Well, 15 games into this one, last place in the Central, just 61 runs scored. Offense obviously is not hitting. Is this something that could be leading to it's like a long-term situation with the Cardinals? Just they were able to always reload, Tom, and keep young players. It doesn't seem to be that way right now, and maybe the young guys aren't producing like they thought.
No, look, and what did they do? They went out and got more old players this offseason. Yeah. Cardinals are saying, we know our window's closing. We're in a very weak Central. Can we sneak one more year out of Arenado and Goldschmidt? And then they're going to blow it up and start over. And they have a good base to start over. I mean, Walker and their minor league system is pretty good. But this is their last-ditch effort. The Cardinals are in a dangerous position as an organization, because they can absolutely look at themselves come mid-July and say, all right, let's see what we can get for Arenado. Let's see what we can get for Goldschmidt. Let's see what we get for a Miles Mikolas. Let's see what we can get, and let's blow this thing up. If the Cardinals are sitting here, and I don't think they have to be in last place, Tim, but if the Cardinals are sitting here looking up at three teams, they don't feel like it's a catchable situation. They're not playing for a wild card in the Central. I think the Cardinals could be in sell mode, and people will be stunned at who could be sold.
In the East, Braves 8-5, game better than the Phillies. You have the Mets under 500. Tom, Washington, there's your, one of your surprise teams. They're sitting right there, 2.5 back. And I guess I'll start with this team just because of how bad they are. The Marlins are 3-12, Tommy. They've scored just 53 runs this year as a team. Did you expect – I don't think you expected this. But how bad is this team, and what's going on down south?
I think the reality here, Tim, is that the Marlins are a team that, you know, they're a young group. And when they lost Sandy Alcantara, who was their guy, you know, their ace, and I know Luzardo's good, and when they lost him, I think the team just kind of sleptwalked through the season. We know that Jazz Chisholm is the man there. Is he a good leader, Tim? I mean, he's got ex-teammates kind of calling him out. So who's the guy on that team? Jake Berger? Jazz Chisholm? Luzardo? Who's the guy on that team that's going, okay, guys, look, we lost 5-6 games in a row. Let's not let this get out of hand. I'm going to take control. Who's that guy? They don't have it, right? They don't have that stopper, that guy, that batter, that team leader. He doesn't exist on the team. So the Marlins are bad right now. I don't think it's going to get much better.
I kind of look at it as ownership, front office decisions have been horrible over the last 5 to 7 years. And you said Alcantara, they had Lopez for a while, right, Tom, before they decided to move on from them. At one point, they were considered one of the best up-and-coming pitching. Were able to put together a pitching staff of up-and-comers that would have rivaled, they were talking like you got potential 320 game winners here, which is unheard of, but that's the way they were trying to label them, and now they have zero. They have none of those guys. The main dude is, like you said, is out with arm injury. So just the front office decision, like the whole thing with Mattingly, never sat right with me. It's just like sometimes it does trickle down from the top, Tom. I just think it's a badly, poorly run organization. I guess maybe that's why Derek Jeter's no longer involved, correct? He saw the writing on the wall as well.
When Derek Jeter, when Don Mattingly, and when Kim Ng leaves, who are considered like three of the best baseball minds out there, when they leave on their own and desert your team, you know there's a problem, right? I mean, you know that there's a problem. The Marlins are trying to recreate the pitching staff, but what they do is that they go out there, they go get new guys. Max Mayer looks good and Luzardo looks good. And they go, okay, these guys are looking pretty good. We're not going to build anything around them. They'll have one or two good seasons here, and then they're gone. And then we'll trade and try to do it all again. I don't think the Marlins want to win. I don't think they care about winning. For them, it's not about winning. For them, it's just develop, trade away, and just work with it like that.
It's hard to gauge, right, Tom, because it's such a long season. Are you worried about the Phillies, 8-7? They've only scored 56 runs. It's one of the lower totals in the league. And you look at that offense, and you're just like, how is that possible? It's just not all hitting at the same time. That's the problem.
Doesn't it happen every year with Philly?
Yeah.
April, man, when they win the World Series, April, May, June, we're going, sell the Phillies. Blow the team up. They start playing a little bit better. Mid-August, you're looking at 500 team. And then they get on fire, and you go, oh my goodness. Where was this team the whole season? I'm not worried about the Phillies because I've watched it for the last 3 years, Tim. Kind of stumble out of the gate. Talk to me in August.
And then there's Atlanta, Tom, looking for another division title so they can lose in the playoffs. So it seems to be the way it's gone other than the year they won the series. Strider out, and you called it. You said one of the big guns is going to go out, so Strider's out. That leaves you with Fried, Chris Sale, Charlie Morton, and then whatever they decide. Lopez, I would assume, is in the mix. Strider, neither one of us had them in the series, right, Tom? But when you lose a guy like that, you don't replace that, Tom. That's the thing. You're not replacing Spencer Strider. You're trying to find somebody you can bring in to eat up innings or bring somebody up that maybe catch a spark. Like, this is a huge blow to Atlanta. I don't think it's getting as much attention as it should because maybe Freed's the guy that they look at more so than Strider. But this, for me, it's I didn't have them winning the division. I had Philadelphia going as a wild card and beating them in the playoffs. Like we've seen, this changes it for me. I kind of push Philly up to the top of the division as far as winning it now.
Atlanta has very potentially, and I think they are, the best lineup in the National League. Even with the Dodgers, mm-hmm. I think they're the best lineup top to bottom in the NL. Their pitching is terrible. You said Fried, Morton, and Sale. Sale will not pitch 150 innings this year. So you can't count on him late in the season. Morton, look, at this stage of his career, you're hoping he's even alive in August, right? I mean, let's be honest. And then you got Max Fried coming back from an injury. Max Fried's not giving you – there's not a single pitcher on this team that I feel like will be pitching in top form outside of Strider when he was there. I'm not even talking about in September and October. I'm talking about August, Tim, right? If Sale makes it to August, it's a miracle. If Morton makes it to August, it'll be a 4 or a 5 dragging. And if Fried makes it to August, they're going to start limiting him. The Braves have to make a move. They are stacked offensively. I mean stacked. You can't let this kind of offense and this kind of team go to waste. You have got to really make some moves. I know they got some young guys, but do you sit back and hope that the young guys come up, or do you just go for it? I think they got to go for it. They got to make a big move.
Over the American League, Tom, your Yankees off to a red hot 12-3 start. Baltimore, Tampa, Boston, all right there for second, and then the Jays even put them in the mix too. All those teams right around 500. So, talk about the East.
Tim, the Yankees are downright scary how good they are. Think about it like this. If I told you before the year, and you know me, I picked Baltimore to win this division. If I told you before the year, forget about any team, but let's talk about the Yankees with their, let's just say it, fragile psyche over the last couple of years. You're going to lose Gerrit Cole. Aaron Judge is going to bat about 150. Juan Soto is going to be getting criticized in New York for taking too many walks. You're going to lose DJ LeMahieu and his backup that you go trade for. You're going to lose all of that. And you're still going to win 12 of the first 15 games. By the way, going up against very good teams, going up against Houston, the Guardians, a first-place team, the Blue Jays, and Arizona into Arizona. The Yankees are downright scary with their approach and what they have.
What? Give me the Achilles heel then. Is it Rodon, Stroman, Cortez, Poteet, Schmidt, Gill? Is that always going to be the thing for you, that the pitching is just not what you think is where it needs to be? I'm talking about not now. I'm just talking about as the season drags on.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. It's two very different things, Tim, because the pitching where it stands right now, they could win the division with this staff. It's deep. They're playing well. They don't need a lot from them. They got a great bullpen. Okay, they can win a division with this staff. Short series. If you don't have Gerrit Cole as your number one and pushing everybody back, I'm worried. I'll tell you what. Even if you have Gerrit Cole, I'm concerned. I don't want to see a staff where Stroman starting game 2, Rodon starting game 3 in a series against, you know, Grayson Rodriguez, Corbin Burns, and what the Orioles are bringing to the table. Or in a series with a healthy DeGrom and Scherzer who are coming back for the Rangers, right? I don't want to see that. Or Seattle with a Castillo and a Kirby 1-2 and, you know, what they can bring to the table. The New York Yankees have to have a healthy Gerrit Cole. And even then, in a short series, they could still get burned if they don't have one of these guys really turn heads. And Stroman has looked good, and Rodon has looked better, but I mean really turn into that guy. They need a 1-2 punch or else you're not making it out of the first round.
Orioles 8-6. They have lost 2 straight to the Brewers. So they're 8-4 coming into this series, Tom. They had given up just 42 runs before Milwaukee put an 11 spot on the last 2 days. Look, Milwaukee's hot, no doubt about it. They were down today 4-1 and then just went ballistic on Baltimore in the back half of the game. I'm not worried about the Orioles right now. I'm not. And I know, like, sometimes we're thinking, what's going on with them? This should be so much better. But they are still pretty good, right, Tom? They score a lot of runs. I don't look at the last 2 games as anything. And here for me is, like, if you want to get right, how do you get right? Well, you go out and win a game. You go out and your ace throws a nice game tomorrow against his old mates, and they're back in the winning column, right? Or one of the young kids has a big game. Maybe Jackson Holley took a day off, right? He's struggled since he's been called. If he takes a day off, he'll be in the lineup tomorrow. He has a good game. That's the thing, I think, when you're looking at the Orioles' ascension to where we think they should be, is they go out and get Corbin Burns. Well, this is a Corbin Burns situation, right, Tom? Let's stop the losing streak. You throw your ace, you get it done, and we're not worried about anything right now. He goes out and gets bombed tomorrow. I still don't worry, but at the same time, it's like, okay, well, we're too good to be this bad. I think they just got Milwaukee at the wrong time.
Here's the only concern I have with the Orioles, and I've made a lot of money on them so far. TomBartonSports.com has won more money on the Orioles this year than any other team. Here's my concern, Tim. They came out, they beat the Angels, a non-playoff team, by all likelihood, a non-playoff team. Then they beat the Royals, likely a non-playoff team. Then they beat the Pirates, but they lost 2 or 3, but even the Pirates they faced, probably not a playoff team. Then they took on Boston, probably not a playoff team. Now they're taking on the Brewers. Hot start, not sure if they're a playoff team. That's the problem with the Orioles. When they get their test, and oh, by the way, they really don't have a test until the end of the month. When they get their test, are they going to be okay? You know, they got the Twins next, Royals after that, Angels after that, A's after that. Before you go into May, where you have to face the Yankees at the Reds, you're taking on the D-backs, the Blue Jays, the Mariners. Yeah, you start to get into the depths of the schedule. And I'm not sure this Oriole team is ready for that if there's anything negative. I'm not worried either, Tim. But the level of competition that the Orioles have faced has just not been good yet.
Yeah. No, I agree. Schedule's a schedule, right, Tom? We'll get to the Angels in a little bit. But if you look at their schedule, Orioles, Red Sox, Rays, and they played them literally within a 3-week span. They played Orioles, Rays, Red Sox, Rays, Red Sox, or, you know, it's just the way it's written. I think when you look at Baltimore, and you and I, like you said, we watch, they're just fun to watch, man. That's the thing. And Boston game, they end up taking Boston out in that series. It was 3-3 going into the 10th. They put a 6 spot up in the 10th. That's how dangerous they can be.
Yeah, I think that the Orioles are still the team to beat. The Yankees are crushing it. If I'm an Orioles fan, though, I'm nervous that the Yankees are doing what they're doing. But in the back of my head, I'm going, I still have the best 1-2 with Grayson Rodriguez following Corbin Burns. And that gives me a lot of inspiration.
AL Central, Tom, the Royals. They were the most active team in the offseason via free agency. Added a lot of veterans to the roster. 10-5. They have played 10 of those 15 games at home where they're 8-2. They've scored 84 runs. Again, let's check the schedules, but it is what it is. They're a game better than the Guardians, Tommy. Chris Wynn, Detroit Tigers, 8-6. And then you got the Twins, and team might be worse. Probably still the worst team in baseball, the White Sox at 2-12. So how about the Central, Royals, Guardians, Tigers, Tommy?
We knew this was going to kind of be a toss-up. White Sox are terrible. The Twins can't score since Royce Lewis went down. The Tigers, look, it's all up there pitching. You know, you like Skubal. You hope Mize could do something. You hoped Olsen could do something. Neither one of them have really looked the part yet. But you like the bullpen. The Guardians, I thought that they were going to fall apart. But let's also be honest. The reason why I took the Yankees both games today, and I brought this up, who have the Guardians beaten? 5 of their 9 wins have come against last place teams. So I think that's going to fall apart, especially with Bieber being out. And then you have the Royals. Team, everybody seemed to love their moves in the offseason. Everybody was saying, you know what, is it going to be enough? I don't see this Royals team winning 90 games, but can they win the division with 85, 86 wins? Can they get there? I still feel the same way. The Royals have a superstar. They have a good bullpen. They have experience. Maybe they don't have an ace, but they got a bunch of threes on their team. And in this division, that might be enough.
They have a bunch of threes, though, and they're pitching like ones right now, right, Tom? Raggins,
oh, man,
Singer.
How good does Seth Lugo look, huh?
Yeah. They've given up 46 runs as a team. And even in the bullpens, is a refractured bullpen. But the thing about the Royals, watching them, it's not. We already know, right, Tom? It's not going to stay this way. The threes are going to pitch like threes and fours. The fours are going to pitch like fives, sixes, whatever. So, but the thing in that division, we only had every year we only take one team out of there, and that's just usually the way it is. Somebody's got to win it.
What's impressive is their bats. I mean, look, Bobby Witt is a true star of this game. He might already be, and in my opinion, he's one of the top five players in the game. But their bats, a guy like Mikael Garcia stepping up, you know, Perez still stepping up. They're routinely putting up crooked numbers, and they're putting up big numbers, 10 runs, 11 runs. They're crushing the ball. That's something I didn't expect from this Royals team.
And out west, defending champions, Tom, Texas Rangers, 8-7. Half a game better than the Angels at 7-7. Then you got the Mariners, same record as the A's right now, 6-9. And the Houston Astros, Tom, we'll start there. The Houston Astros, this is the worst start for them we've seen in a long, long time. They're 5-11 to open the season.
You can't hear it, Tim, but I'm smiling from ear to ear. The Red Sox and the Astros are both in last place. You know, I saw this with the Astros, and again, I didn't see 5-11, but I saw the struggles. When you lose a Verlander, it's not that you're losing his numbers, you're losing that presence of him. The Astros shook up their bullpen. A lot of people thought it made it much better. It was still a shakeup in the bullpen. The Astros are a team that rely on 3-4 bats, and after that, I thought they'd get a little weak. You know, they're top heavy, but they're weak. The Astros, to me, are a team that they're still trying to kind of find themselves, and themselves is this. Who's the ace of the staff? Don't think they have one, right? Who's that, those couple of scrappy guys on the team that could do damage at the end of the lineup? Not sure they have that. Can they play good defense? Not really a good defensive team. So all of a sudden, you start to ask questions about the Astros. I think they'll be okay. But I didn't have them winning this division. I had them fighting for a wild card spot because I thought that they would struggle with some of those questions.
Yeah. And now you lose Valdez.
Yeah. So two out of the five guys, and you could really say two out of the top four guys that you thought were going to be mainstays in the line in the rotation are out.
Yeah. How about Mariners? Surprise, 6-9 start. Have not looked offensively. They're not hitting the ball, Tom. They have 47 runs right now.
Well, that was the problem with the Mariners. I thought the Mariners could be very good this year. I thought the Mariners could be exceptionally good this year, we'll say. And everything relied upon, okay, you have Julio Rodriguez, and who do you have after him? Right? I mean, that was it. If Julio doesn't hit, this team doesn't win. They still have just exceptional pitching. And I love their bullpen. But even that right now isn't pitching up to where it should. Kirby's good, but Castillo's ERA is like nearly a 7. That's going to change. Their bullpen's good, but their big weapon in the bullpen, Brash, it hasn't played yet this year. He's doing a rehab assignment this week. So I'm giving the Mariners a little time, but I do think all year long we're going to be asking, who's that second bat? You know, and you could say it's Kyle Raleigh who's going to hit, you know, 30 home runs this year, but he's a catcher and he sits half the time and the guy bats 220. They need someone else as a running mate. They need a Robin to the Batman that is Julio Rodriguez.
Angels, Tom, 7-7, half a game behind the Rangers. Early season thoughts on my boys.
Mike Trout is still Mike Trout. But the Angels don't get on pace for them. I mean, that's reality. What I like about the Angels, they play good defense, which is underrated in baseball always, right? They have young guys at key positions. When you were younger and growing up, Tim, every baseball coach worth a salt would tell you, you want strong guys at catcher, shortstop, and center, right? That was always it. They got Ohapi, Neto, and Trout covered, done. They need more there, but you like what they're putting together. Their bullpen is still a piece away, but I think they're going to be okay. Reed Detmers is turning into that guy we thought that the Angels still needed, but I still think they need him, right? I still think they need one more. I'm looking at them and I'm going, look, 7-7 is about right. I think that they're going to be about 500. If they make a move to go get an arm, this could be that surprise team.
The next 10, 12 days are going to be very telling for this staff as they, this team as they hit the road at Tampa, at Boston, at Baltimore. This is the next two series, Tom. They're at Tampa, come back, and they have the Orioles in Anaheim off a road trip. That's where it's going to come into. And I think when you look at the team, Drury not hitting, Tom, Neto not hitting, Chanel not hitting, they're going to start hitting. Rendon even started hitting, right, Tom? After that terrible start, he's actually got his average up over 200 now, Tommy. How about that? When they do hit, they're good. They're going to be good. And Taylor Ward's crushing the ball. Trout, like you said, look, he's got 6 home runs and 8 RBIs. That just kind of tells you everything you need to know. But Ward's the one that's picking up. He has 5 homers and 16 ribs. They just got to, you know, the schedule. We always talk about schedules, but I know people are like, well, it's early. I saw this team go lose 14 straight games 2 years ago, Tom. Sometimes that schedule, whether it comes in the beginning of the season or the end, is brutal to you. And when you have the next 4 games against Tampa, then they head to Cincinnati, which they're a good team, right? You got to go there. So the next 8 games on the road before you have Baltimore waiting for you when you come home. They got to get through this stretch and see where they're at. And if they can come out, I'd say out of the next, 4? So they got 1 tomorrow, 4, 5, 8, 11 games. You got to win at least 6 of them, right, Tom? 5, 6 puts you right at 500 still. I think that's okay.
I think every Angel fan really, really, really wants them to be 500 come the trade deadline, right? You want to force Artie Moreno to make a decision. And you want to kind of force Artie Moreno to say, okay, am I going for it or am I not? You know, you want them to be right there. All right, we're 500, a little bit above. All right, Artie, go do your work. Go get us that ace that we all know that we need. The offense is playing well. We're staying relatively healthy, playing some good defense. We just need something to put us over the top. And it's almost like the Artie Moreno test. That's what you want. Mid-July, you know, you're sitting there at a barbecue, Tim, in mid-July. You want to hear Artie Moreno is making a move. And I think that's all you can ask for if you are the Angel.
First ever in their franchise history. Even after 15 games, played the Cubs, they played the Rays, and then they played, to going by record, the last 3 series have been against well below 500 teams in the Astros and the A's. Your take on, you know, and you look at the Rangers, they've had games where they scored 11 and 9 and 10, 12. They scored 12 the other day. So 81 runs scored, 64 against. You'd think they'd be better than 8-7. It's just the games they've lost were the 4-1s, 2-1s, 3-2 games.
With them, I think that we just talked about the Angels getting to 500. With the Rangers, it's all been about just get to 500. Get to 500 when Scherzer comes back. Get to 500 when DeGrom comes back. And then we roll. And then we start moving. They are in a position where they're dealing with, like, Andrew Heaney is kind of their ace right now, right? I mean, that's what's going on. Their bullpen doesn't have a definitive closer. They don't have a definitive ace. Not even sure they have a number 2. Their pitching right now is kind of a mess. But like you said, their losses are not the pitcher's fault. I just think that's going to kind of show out eventually. Eventually, the Rangers are going to get into a position where they're going to start having to slug the ball to win games. That's how they're going to have to win. And just look at DeGrom and Scherzer as those midseason just huge trade pieces that come to your team and you go, okay, now we can really try to defend the title.
That's the thing. But that offense, if you get them in there, they're dangerous. But you have to expect the and they have young pieces there too, right, Tom? Young guys that are going to get better as the season goes on. But it seems like it's the age old question in Major League Baseball is how do you make your pitching better? And I just don't know how that is. I don't know who's out there that makes a difference right now. And I know it's April. I get it. But these things, if they don't correct themselves, right, Tom? We could be talking about the Rangers. And come August, we could talk about the Rangers going from the World Series to not even making the playoffs.
But well, they're counting on two old arms coming back, though, right? I mean, yeah. Like you said, you know, it's early. We shouldn't be talking about trades, but let's be honest. There are some teams that should be talking about trades. The Marlins being one of them. Hey, Marlins are jam-packed full of arms, right? So it's not like you can't go out there and find a serviceable guy if you needed to. But they're not thinking about that. They are thinking, we went out there and we got the two former Mets. We have a lot of money invested into Grom and Scherzer. And if they join our team in August, even in mid-August, that'll put us over the top.
I'm not sure when I look at – I always try to take the season, Tom, in quarters, right? So quarter one would be 40 games. We're 15 games. So we're a quarter of a quarter almost. What do you think with the rash of injuries and the new rule changes, when you look at the sport, it's all that. You said it earlier. With all that going on, it's at a peak right now. It's the hottest it's been in years, man. What do you correlate that to? Is it just the way it comes back around? What are they doing differently that's making it profile higher than it usually is? Do you have any thoughts on that? Because I'm not going to say it's the genius people that run Major League Baseball. We know better than that. What do you think it is?
Tim, I think it's that – baseball's always been there. And baseball is kind of the game that you know what you're going to get. If you were an NBA fan 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and you try to watch the NBA product now, can't do it. Just it's a different game. As popular as the NFL is, and it's massively popular, totally different game than 10 years ago, certainly from 20 years ago, right? If you try to watch the NHL, completely different game 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and now. The one constant that you have to steal from Field of Dreams is baseball. You know you're going to turn it on. You know what you're going to have. And I think people are coming back to that consistency. We see the country and the narrative and the mindset of the country shifting, right? You read people trying to buy homesteads and get away from the cities. And that mindset goes with what baseball is, and which is – it's simple. It's slower. It's a thinking man's game. People are more intelligent now that watch baseball. Always have been. You know, the most intelligent people are watching and playing baseball. So it's coming back. I think that's why. And baseball has also learned how to become a TV sport. They're learning that. They have the base. You know, MLBNetwork.com is great. MLB.com on you know the Roku stick and all that is fantastic. The inside look and checking it all out. We're not just showing home run after home run after home run. No, they're showing you the real fun of the game, stealing and running bases and taking the extra base and slides and getting under the tank. All of that is now being marketed the right way. I still don't think they market the stars the right way, but the game is being marketed and shown the right way. And they've taken it to become a TV sport while America's saying, hey, we want to go back to it. You know, a sport that isn't all about size and flash actually takes a little brain power, and I think that's why.
Why can't they get the uniforms right then, Tom? Come on, man.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. And you know what's funny? My brain went directly to the disgusting City Connect uniforms, but no. Yeah, Fanatics really ruined everything this year.
I usually get a new – I get a jersey at least – I at least get one jersey every season, right, Tom? So when that's – and I hadn't thought about who it was going to be yet. And now I don't even know if I want to get one after I've seen all these articles and then you see the – watching the games and you look at the jerseys. They're like soaked through in the third inning. I was just like, what happened here? What?
Tim, this is a really good year to go back and go get a classic. Go find a Hall of Famer that played in, you know – 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and go get one of those classic jerseys.
Don't get a new one because you're going to get one that look like it shrunk in the dryer. Is that what it is?
Yeah, exactly.
Man.
The players wearing the jerseys don't like them. You shouldn't intentionally wear a likable jersey.
Right. Well, Tom, we got a busy day tomorrow, Major League Baseball. I know Tom Barton Sports is going to have some plays ready for us. Talk about the website as we get rolling out of here on a Saturday night.
Yeah, coming off a nice 2-0 day in Major League Baseball. The Yankees, both sides of a doubleheader. I have two games tomorrow already up on the board. So if you sign up at TomBartonSports.com, jump right on board. You're going to get it. You're going to get every single thing that I give out right at TomBartonSports.com. Starting tomorrow, every Major League Baseball play, every prop, all the futures, the draft stuff that I'm going to do for the NFL, NHL, which I am absolutely crushing recently. And, you know, on the year, I'm still over 500, still making money. And the NBA, I have one loss in the NBA total. Now, I'm not playing a lot of games, but I got one loss. That's all at TomBartonSports.com.
And what about all the other things Tommy Barton does? YouTube, got podcasts going on radio every week. You're a busy man.
Yes, I am. Go check me out. My podcast, of course, over on the Believe Network, Believe in the Ivy League, and Believe in Betting. And on the YouTube channel, it's Tom Barton Sports over on YouTube.
All right, Tom. Tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, the big show, the Super Sunday night edition of Heatwave Sports. We'll talk to you then.
Have a good one, everybody.
For Mr. Tom Barton, Mateo, as always, doing a great job. Tim Unglesby, we'll talk to you tomorrow night, 10 o'clock. Heatwave Sports, only on Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas. Have a good night.